The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Welcome to Everyone Loves Guitar, where we get to sit down and talk with interesting professional guitar players and related music industry experts. If you love playing guitar, stick around. You're in the right place. Hey, everybody. This is Craig Garber from Everyone Loves Guitar, and we're here with my main man, Jordan Greenwald. Jordan has the distinction of being the youngest human being on this show.
I'm happy to take the cake.
Yes. I think you and John Prentice, whose interview is actually published today, I think you're both 21. So,
oh, nice.
Jordan's 21. He's born in L.A., grew up in the entertainment and TV industry. His dad is actually a television producer. He picked up a guitar at a young age. He played it all over L.A. throughout high school. He came to Nashville, went to a music school at Belmont University, down here for 2 years, moved back to L.A. after getting an audition for a touring gig out there. While he was out there, he met the lead singer of a band called Lovely the Band and joined up with them in April. Their first single came out, and they signed a record deal shortly after that, and it's a cool record. We'll talk about it. The band's debut EP is called Everything I Could Never Say. I like that title. How did that come out?
That title was something that we were working on. I mean, we were just, thinking about what the first body of music we're going to put out, and we're figuring out if we wanted to do a continuation with this EP and then maybe, you know, the album next year. So that's why it kind of has those three periods at the end of it, you know. So we wanted to do a little bit of a continuation for the record next year. So we kind of figured that one out with that.
I like that. Everything I Could Never Say. It sounds like you know, a bittersweet romantic breakup kind of thing, you know?
Yeah, that's kind of what we go for.
I noticed. I listened to it. I'm like, this is like, this music is designed to get these guys laid, period. I don't think your music has any purpose other than that. It's just like to have lots of sex with like young girls your age. And,
you know,
it doesn't make you a bad person. Let me tell you that. Anyway, their debut EP, Everything I Could Never Say, came out September 22nd, 2017. I listened to the EP. Very cool. For people listening, you know, I have to say it's kind of like, and bear this in mind, so I'm 50, I'll be 54 this week, so my frame of reference is completely, you know, ancient with this kind of music, but and this is meant totally complimentary because these are great records. It sounds like, you know, Duran Duran at their peak, yeah. Like, you know, Rio crossed with, I don't know if you've ever heard of a band called Echo and the Bunnymen.
I've heard of the band. I don't think I've ever really dove into it, but I mean.
Check out this one song called Bring On the Dancing Horses. It was good. Well, another cool name, but it's really good. It's pop music. It's very good music. Very cool alt pop. That's what I would call it.
Thank you.
And you see, I had a comment. You guys must be pulling all the hotties with this. No,
you know, you can only hope. You can only hope.
Well, I hope, but so for your sake. And it's very good music.
That Rio comment. I mean that song is awesome. That the bridge. I know that bridge in that song has a ridiculous bass part.
The whole album is a great album.
It's insane, right?
High energy. Your album has a lot of, you know, the EP has tons of energy, very high energy, you know, very synth heavy. We'll talk a little bit about that, but it's all pop, you know, it's, you know, you're going to get people moving to that. All right, man. So let me ask you this. You grew up in LA. What prompted you to attend Belmont? Because I'm thinking you're right around the corner from Musicians Institute.
Yeah. I mean, so I heard about the Nashville thing right at my senior year of high school. And I had some family out there, and they're either always like, you know, like, is it, you know, they knew I played, and you know, that's kind of what I wanted to do with my life. So I was like, okay, maybe I should go to college. So I applied to two schools. I applied to USC because they have like their popular music program. Cause I was always kind of a pop rock kind of guy playing growing up. So I applied to USC, and then I applied to Belmont because I saw they had kind of a similar program to USC's, and I had all of my eggs, like 99% of my eggs in this USC basket. I got denied from that school, and I got accepted into Belmont, so I kind of graduated and was like, all right, well, I guess I'm going to Belmont, you know?
Wow, that's wild.
Yeah, so it kind of just brought me out there, and like I said, I didn't know about the Nashville thing. I mean, I literally didn't listen to a lick of country music until I landed in Nashville, and like probably in the airport. was when I got like, my literally landed. Personal exposure.
Yeah, that's interesting. Then you left after 2 years and moved back to LA. So what prompted you to go back?
So that was random how that kind of came about. I always, since I was a kid, have put videos on YouTube of like myself playing, you know, and I got a DM on Twitter from the singer of this project that that they were looking for a young guitar player. I was 19. Maybe early 18. I was 18 or 19.
This is for your current band you're with.
No, this is
another band. Okay.
Yeah. So and they told me who it was with, and it was with these, you know, development team that, you know, we were notable and this whole thing. I'm like, all right. So I flew back out. I auditioned and I got the call that I got it. And it was a sort of decision where it was like, all right, well, you know, I feel like when you graduate music school or college, you're looking for an in to something that I was being presented when I was a sophomore.
Right.
You know, so I just kind of took that and took the leap, and it's all was a shit show and just trickled into, you know, meeting people and everything crazy happening. But yeah, it eventually ended up, you know, leading me to this band.
So that's probably when you did that move, I think that took a bit of courage to do that. Especially because I'm sure your parents, well, how did your folks react?
So I grew up in entertainment. My dad is a TV producer. My mom was a talent agent. So I always kind of grew up in it. So they know what it entails, you know, I guess on the entertainment side, not necessarily like the music, but like they know the entertainment thing. So they understand like it's all opportunity based.
Okay. So they were okay with it.
Yeah, because I told them about it, and they're like, you know, so they were into it, and which is amazing. I have the most supportive family and parents around, so I'm very thankful for that. That they have been helping me along.
Okay, so it was so it wasn't like it was a bit of a leap of faith, but it wasn't like having support of your parents at that age. I'm imagining made this a lot easier to take that leap of faith.
It definitely did. Yeah. I mean, because when I was in school, I was still like playing around with, you know, I was in four or five bands, different bands a week, you know, just, you know, going around Broadway, you know, making money, the little money that I did, you know, just kind of around town. And I was like, you know, I could keep doing this, but, you know, I explained it to them and they totally got it. They're like, hey, if, you know, if you're feeling, you know, they trust me. If, you know, they're like, if you're feeling this is what you're meant to do right now, then we should do it. Like we were saying, the California kind of
the universe is pushing
the universe is pushing me, you know.
Well, that's good. It opened up the right door. How did you wind up then hooking up with the singer of
yeah, Lovely? So Mitchie Collins is his name. He was he's been
Mitchie
in LA
Collins
for, yeah, Mitchie Collins. He was in a previous project called Oh Honey, and which had, you know, moderate good success. They had a big song out, but he kind of was ready to have another project that was his own. He was like with another girl. It was like a duet sort of thing. Like
not related to Bootsy, I'm assuming.
What's that? No.
No. Okay.
So he just is around LA. And so the band that I was being developed in was, you know, some of the people associated with that was new Mitchie and was kind of, you know, and they invited me out one night and I went out and I met up with Mitchie and we just kind of clicked. And he actually that night, he showed me the demos of this new project that he had, which actually wasn't called Lovely the Band at first. It was called, I think we were calling it Crybaby at first, but we ran into some trademark issues with that. So nothing didn't end up being called Crybaby, obviously, right. But he ended up showing me the demos of these songs and I was just like, wow, these are unbelievable. So, and you know, it was a kind of a combination of, that project that I left school for kind of blowing up internally and then kind of the right timing where I met, Mitchie, and it just kind of was a transition into, all right, well, this is what's going to be happening.
So after you listened to it, you guys had a meeting, you know, he basically said, hey, do you want to come in on it with us?
Yeah. Yeah. Cause he's like, hey man, like I know you play guitar and I know you're in your thing. He's like, what's the deal with it? I'm like, oh, it's kind of imploding. Like some stuff isn't really happening. You know, he's like, well, I need a guy like you to, you know, to get this thing going. And I was initially like, well, is it like going to be like a hired thing? you know, because the band that I got, the band that I left school for was like, it would, it was like a band, like I would be a part of like a, you know, a band. It wasn't like a hired thing. So I asked him, like, is it a hired thing? And he's like, no, it's going to be like a fun alternative pop sort of thing. And the music was so my style. When he showed it to me, I was amazed. And I think that's awesome that the music was the first thing that attracted me to it.
Yeah, for sure.
Because it makes it more authentic in my head, I think it does.
No, I agree with you, because 100% more authentic, and it's just easier and feels better, man, to do something like that.
Exactly. And it's like, right when you showed me some of the demos, I'm like, man, these songs would be insane to play live. You know, they'd be so much fun, you know, the whole thing. And I'm just like, man, has all this guitar in it, the cool synth parts. I'm like, wow, like this is really, really cool.
And you're coming from Nashville, so that's why you're asking him, is this a hired thing? Like, yeah, am I the studio guy? Yeah, right. I'm sure. Because it's interesting, because I'm talking to guys now in New York and L.A., and some of the work in L.A. is like that. But even there, and definitely in New York, there is no, like, I mean, there's some studio cats, but usually if you're in, you're in. It's not like you're supporting the artist. It's like you're on the record, you're on tour,
And it's a weird transition, because I was touring with this guy named James Maslow, who was in a boy band called Big Time Rush that had pretty big success in like 2011, kind of that area. Like, it was like a Nickelodeon sort of.
Wait, 2011, what were you, like 14 or something? Or?
So yeah, something like that.
Wow.
Like middle school. So he went off and did a solo thing, and my friend, called me and he's like, hey, do you want to do this tour with James, because he was doing a European tour to support his new record that he just had out. And this was all during the time that I met Mitchie and I left the band.
Wow.
Yeah, so it was like an interesting,
so it's like a feast or famine opportunity wise.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And luckily enough for me, I was able to do both.
Oh, great.
Yeah, so Lovely didn't start up until late or early spring, and I did that European tour with James in March. So it was like a perfect kind of seamless transition into it. But there was a point where I had to make a decision. I was like, okay, am I going to be in this, you know, in this signed thing, or am I going to keep doing this hired gun thing with James? But I mean, me and him are very good friends still. We hang out all the time and, you know, do all the thing. But I kind of took the leap with Lovely, and you know, it's been working out so far, so very excited about that.
That's good. Congratulations. I'm happy for you, man.
Thanks, man.
The you know, most of the time you pay tuition, you learn from the bad experiences. So what did you learn? Like, what was your lessons maybe that you took away after doing this first thing that blew up for whatever reason it blew up? What did you get out of that?
It was, I learned that putting all your eggs in a basket that you're not 100% sure on is a thing that you shouldn't do. Yeah. Pretty much. I think that, and I think, you know, I learned a lot how to handle relationships and how to handle situations being in a band and it being a democracy, you know, and not all, you know, it's that band dynamic is a hard thing to be a part of, because it's like a marriage where, you know, and it's like a relationship where it's like you have to, you know, you make compromises, you make sacrifices so everyone's happy, but also it's like sometimes you know what's right, you know, so you just have to, a thing to figure out. And I was young, you know, I'm saying I was young 2 years ago, I was 19 and that
no
thing.
But but when you are 19, your coping skills and your communication and your processing skills isn't the same as it's going to be when you're 30. That's just the reality of it. The fact that you're aware of it is great, but yeah, that's a valid thing.
You know, so yeah, it was definitely a learning experience, and I think that thing ending and this thing happening so randomly, it's just, I mean, everything happens for a reason.
Yeah.
You know,
what have you learned? Well, one thing I wanted to kind of like not challenge you, but you said don't put all your eggs in one basket. But whenever, forget the music business, whenever you're in an entrepreneurial situation, it's a new project. To some extent, you are doing that.
Yeah, definitely. And I think putting all your eggs in one basket in something that you're 100% confident about is different than putting it in something that you're like 75% on. Even if you're all like, this is going to be great, you know what I mean? It's like, it's just not the same when you're 100% this is going to be awesome. I'm really excited about it. You know,
maybe the authenticity thing comes into play too there, as far as, you know, like you said, this music was like right up your alley. Was the other band, it was kind of like you liked it, but it wasn't like 100% match?
Yeah, and exactly. Yeah, okay, exactly. I mean, I'm willing to do, still am and was willing to do whatever to get to a certain touring level and being able to do this full time. You know, I mean, I was playing music and, you know, and even in Nashville when I was playing 2 hour sets at a, you know, at a Broadway honky tonk hotel in front of three people for $45,
yeah.
You know, whatever it was, I was like, I'm just want to do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, that's the mentality that I've had. That's kind of led me to where I am right now.
Cool. What did you get? What was your, you know, you made an EP in the studio. What was your biggest takeaway learning from that? Because I'm sure that was a lot of work.
Yeah, definitely. So most of the, so this first EP, how it came about. So Mitchie, he's had a bunch of these songs on the EP and that aren't on the EP. He's had a bunch of these songs for, I think up to like 2 years, he's had them written. He's had them written and demoed out. So it wasn't until that, you know, I came in and we wrote some new ones and kind of finalized different parts on different other songs was when we really started to dive into these songs and make them a Lovely the Band sort of thing. And not just, okay, so Mitchie's bringing these songs in. Now it's like, we're all doing this, but you know, I think the most in this situation was, or in this process of this record cycle is, I think don't go into a song with like a part and think that, okay, this is the part and I'm going to stick to it. You know, always kind of be open to change, I think, is what I kind of took from that.
Did you, the other guys, are they also band members or were they just hired out?
No, they were band members. We work heavily with our producer, Christian Metis. He produced and wrote with us on this EP. And the process with that is, you know, we're there and he comes up, he has his synth part and we all kind of, I guess it's different with every track. I mean, you know, songwriting is just different with every song, but you know, a lot of the time it was you know, we're in a room and Mitchie has a lyric and the lyric kind of matched with this synth vibe that Christian came up with. And then I put a guitar on it. It's Sam, our drummer. He has an amazing, amazing voice. He comes, you know, he can come in and write. So it's really just a group effort that comes into that really, helped this EP grow.
So this is probably what you were looking for since day one, when you moved back, to have this sort of collaborative enthusiasm with everybody.
100%, you know, and that's the fun part about being in a band is having this product that you work so hard on and you're so excited to show people that you're like, okay, this is our thing and we're ready to show you.
That's awesome, you know? Man. So I listened to the EP, the last song, that Strangers, you got to open up on a solo there on the outro. tell me about that. It was really good. Like, what kind of guitar are you using? What kind of effects? What was going on there?
Yeah. So, we played a first show. Our first show was in June, I believe, at the Roxy, and
cool? It must be really cool to say, oh yeah, we did our first show at the Roxy, because that's like,
yeah, that was, yeah.
Come on, that's got to be cool, because everybody, like, you know, that's anybody sort of like plays at the Roxy, right?
Dude, the Roxy is amazing. It's one of my favorite venues, and I didn't ever. I mean, but in LA, it's definitely one of my favorite venues. It's iconic. It sounds great. Right. Looks good. But anyway, so we played that show when we played the song Strangers, and my business partner and I call him my second dad. His name's Joseph Bon Jovi. He came up to me. He's like, there's just one thing in the set that you didn't have. It was like a big solo, because I didn't have the solo in that song yet.
Oh, interesting.
So he's like, there's one thing you're missing. It's just like, I wanted to see you wail. I just wanted to see you go off. And I don't get to do that in this band, but you know, I love.
Well, it's not pop. That kind of music doesn't usually have that. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. Even though there is guitars and it's like guitar music, it's not necessarily I'm going to be shredding over.
Correct.
You know. So anyway, so when we came back to the songs to finish them for the EP in the studio, that song came about, and the end was empty. There wasn't, or the last chorus, the outro was kind of empty feeling, because it didn't feel like the song kind of came to a big climax, because it's the last song in the EP and we wanted to kind of go out with a bang. And Mitchie was just like, Jordan, just go wail on this. Let's just see what it sounds like. Just go wail on it. I'm like, all right, you know, I'm not going to say no to that.
Of course.
That's fun to do.
Yeah, of course. Hell yeah.
So
say no.
Yeah, I'm not going to say no to that, right?
No thanks. Pass.
But he has a Strat. It's just an American, I think like 2005, 2006 Strat with a humbucker in the bridge.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, yeah, let's try it on this. Because I didn't have any of my guitars in. Because I remember it was like a last minute session. But he had that guitar and we just plugged it in, cranked some gain up. And I just kind of played over a couple times the end and we kind of patched it together. And it was actually interesting because there is a solo there. It's not like directly in your face.
No, but it's not background either. But yeah, it's not in your face. It's part of the climax, is what it is.
Exactly. It's not like, okay, this is the guitar solo.
Yeah.
You know. So we figured out, you know, with, you know, how we EQ'd it and how we put verb and delay on it to kind of bury it, but not necessarily bury it, but kind of you know.
It guides the climax, though. I wouldn't say it's a good, like a, it's not about the guitar, but it does guide the end of the song for sure.
Sure, and I'm happy that people notice it because that's definitely my favorite, and maybe not my favorite, but it's definitely one of my favorites to play live because it's super. It's one of the more technical ones, and you know, it makes me think a little bit.
Good, man. Why does that name Joseph Bon Jovi sound good? And I know it has nothing to do with Bon Jovi.
Well, Bon Jovi. So John is his first cousin,
and
so Joseph is the president and CEO of a band merch, which is one of the biggest band merchandising companies in the world.
Okay.
I mean, they do everywhere from The Who to, I mean, you name it, like they do it. But so they work with us, but I've known him for forever, and I grew up with him and his family. So
cool.
But he was the guy that kind of put it in my head. Then I'm like, all right, well, maybe it's okay to do that. You know,
that's good, man. In the kind of music you guys are making with alt pop, there's a lot of post production. What was the biggest challenge along those lines on your end?
I think fitting into, it's a thing where, you know, we're not writing like a Van Halen song where it's all based off of, okay, this is the riff of the song. I mean, Strangers is kind of like that where there's like a reoccurring thing, but it's not like, okay, it's based upon this riff. It's a thing where I'm kind of figuring out how to fit into the track. So it's almost backwards.
Mm.
So figuring out how to do that was definitely a learning curve, and it's still learning. Every time we go and we play and we rehearse, whatever, it's all about figuring out how to fit into the big picture of it. As far as the production, you know.
So that being said, this experience is really, in a sense, prepping you to be, like, number one, a really good team player, but number two, probably it's teaching you how to improve your music writing skills. In being able to see and hear the full spectrum of everything, as opposed to, you know, you're the guitar guy that happens to write music, where you're going to hear your voice primarily.
Exactly. And that was the thing. And this is the first project that's, I guess, that's ever let me kind of, let me realize that that's a next step that I could take and take to my, you know, musicality and my diversity of whatever, you know, I'm doing, is that I can bring this now, this being able to fit in and write, opposed to, okay, go learn the solo and we're playing a live show tomorrow night.
Yeah. It's like you're getting a much broader range of skills in a sense.
Exactly.
That's really cool, man. What, anything else you're working on now that you're excited about?
No, I think Lovely is definitely the Lovely Band is definitely the main priority and the main thing for me, and we're very, very excited to take it on tour and, you know, have everyone enjoy it.
So that's a month after the album is, which is roughly about now. You're in high marketing mode for the record, I'm assuming.
Exactly. Yeah. Cool. Exactly.
Where are you guys going on tour?
Yeah, so we have a couple LA things. I don't know when this is coming out, but there's a couple LA things on. I think November 6th, we're doing something with iHeart and 98.7, and 7th, we're actually doing the Roxy again, which we're really excited about. But we're going on tour with this band called The Rex, which are a really, really cool band out of LA.
Okay.
Actually, I don't know if they're out of LA. Don't quote me on that. But anyways, they're
The Rex really, or really, The Weeks?
The Rex.
The Rex. Okay. That's a cool we're name, actually. Yeah, that sounds like a hardcore like punk band, The Rex.
No, and they're punk. They're definitely punky. Yeah. It's really they're really really cool. They're great guys. So yeah, we're touring for a little over a month with them at the end of November. So yeah, we're really excited to do that tour.
Awesome, man. So we talked about you're originally from LA. What was your childhood like? Both your parents in the entertainment business. You probably had like guy. I've met guys. I've interviewed guys like. In your situation, but more music, and they're like, oh, well, you know, I've had so-and-so over my house. Like, was it like that with you? Like, you had, like...
Yeah, it was... Well, it was a sort of thing where, I mean, every week I went to a TV set after school, you know, every Friday when they were taping. I just went, and that was normal for me. Like, right. That was just what... That's just what life was, and I didn't know anything different, and I grew up by the beach, so we always went to the beach, and I'm making this sound very glamorous, but, you know, it was, I'm, you know.
No, it is what it is, man. Good. It's good. Kid, why, what are you supposed to do? Suffer if you don't have to?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's wrong with that. Good.
Yeah. No, I was happy, though. It was a, you know, my parents are great, yeah, they definitely, I'm very fortunate that I got to grow up the way I did.
It's interesting that, guys that become, I have not spoken to anybody for the most part that, especially younger cats under, let's say 30, 35 even, mm-hmm. that have not had supportive parents to help them in, you know, to encourage and help them. And I think that's probably really important for any kind of creatives, you know?
Definitely.
What kind of shows does your dad produce?
He created the show Wizards of Waverly Place on Disney Channel.
Oh yeah. My kids used to watch that.
Yeah. So that's
where the New York thing came. Cause Waverly Place is in the Village, man.
Exactly. Yeah. He grew up in the Upper East Side.
That's so funny.
Yeah. I have family on Long Island. And I mean, my whole family is literally from the East Coast, and me and my sister are the only people born on the West Coast of my whole family.
I remember literally taking my kids walking down the street, and I was like, hey guys, here's Waverly Place, you know, right off 7th Avenue. This is the show you watch. So it was kind of cool.
That's tight.
That's so funny, man. So moving forward, you know, as you start this journey, do you have any thoughts about like what you want to do as, you know, short term and even longer term if you have a vision? And if you don't, that's totally fine. I'm just curious.
Yeah, I've learned even just the past 3-4 years of doing this. It's doing this professionally, I guess you could say. That you know you can plan as much as you want, and you could. I guess it's just life in general. You can plan, and you could you know make things up in your head that this is what's going to be happening in next week, or in 3 years, or in 2 months, or whatever it is. But it's just like you just never know. You really have to. I mean, you can plan, but you really have to be. You really have to live. You know, day by day, week by week in this sort of industry, just because you never know what call you're going to get. You never know who you're going to meet. You just don't know. You know, and I guess that's just in life in general, you know, with relationships or what have you. It's like,
it is true. We had a conversation a couple of different guys, and you know, there's a saying in, you know, whatever religion or whatever people listen to, but you know, you want to make God laugh, tell him your plans.
Exactly.
So that's very true. That being said, you're still young in your career, and even though you're in with this gig, you still need to keep yourself sort of like visible. Is there anything specific you do? Making those videos is obviously a good thing because you've already gotten gigs from it. Do you still do those?
So it's an interesting thing. So my dad being in TV, I remember, I mean, I've been playing guitar since I was 7 years old, 6 or 7. So I've been playing as long as I can remember. And I remember I got to a certain point where I was playing full, I was able to play full songs, you know, all the way through with different tones and different stuff. I think I was like 12 or 13 or whatever that was. But my dad was like, yo, just start putting things on the internet, start putting videos. Like I remember I put, I think like a Foo Fighters cover on YouTube when I was 13, you know, and that was like probably the first thing that I ever did. So I, you know, I've always throughout high school, you know, when I was in high school bands and whatever, I always put things on the internet. You know, there wasn't Twitter and Instagram, or I wasn't using Twitter and Instagram, you know, that young, but I was always putting things on YouTube. And that's kind of evolved into, you know, when I was in college, I would consistently put one guitar cover up a week on YouTube, and I ended up starting getting a little bit of fan base from it, which was awesome. And that got me to where that gig, because that's how they found me from that YouTube thing. But I learned how to market even just by myself on, you know, figuring out how to channel an audience and, you know, what have you. But now that I'm in Lovely, it's just always, you know, keep putting things out there. Like put on your Instagram, your Twitter, you know, always just keep feeding it. I guess there's different strategies for different people, because I have a lot of friends and a lot of people that don't necessarily post a lot and are artists. But for me, what I've found that's worked is just keep posting things and get people excited about what you're doing and have a great time. Because, you know, when you show other people that you're doing something cool and having a great time, they like latch on to that.
Yeah, I would say I've been in marketing 18 years, which doesn't mean anything, but I've worked a lot. I've worked with 110 clients, over 300 clients in 110 industries. And I would say that putting good quality content out there is always the smartest thing to do.
Right, for sure.
And especially 100%. If you're fun and enthusiastic when you're doing it, which I know you are. What's your YouTube channel where people can find you anyway?
I think it's just you search my name on there. I mean, I haven't touched it in 3 years. I haven't put anything up there. My most current things are just I always upload to my Instagram. And
okay.
Now it's easier than ever now with Instagram, because they have these things called stories where you can just put you literally, you know, put your phone on a table and you can riff out for 10 seconds and have 10,000 people immediately be looking at your thing.
Right.
And Instagram. You know, so, but yeah, it's so just, you know, keep current with what everybody's looking at.
Yeah, because I'm old. I don't do Instagram.
You're not old.
I am. I'm old, man. I got kids older than you. What's your go-to? Let's talk about gear for a little bit. What's your go-to guitar right now? And maybe what other sort of top guitars round out your top favorites?
So I have this Strat. It's a 99 Mexican Sunburst Strat that my dad learned guitar on when he was raising me.
Oh, that is so cool.
And so I still don't even think it's my guitar, because it was a funny thing where I was, you know, 10, 11, and I got better than my dad at playing. So he's like, okay, just take it. And so I've had that guitar since then, and I've toured the world with it and played hundreds of shows and different, and used that guitar in school. And so that guitar, and it's thankfully like that guitar transcends to Lovely the band, because Lovely, the sound works so well with it. So if I'm playing a show these days, I'm having that guitar with me most of the time.
Fantastic, man. And it's your dad's guitar. So that must be like a nice nostalgic, like safe and comfy feeling picking that thing up.
It is. But at the same time now it's like, you know, I'm traveling around the world with it and, you know, it's going through baggage claims. And I'm just like, I do not want anything.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, I have that one. So that's been my number one for a minute, but I have that, we were talking about earlier, I have this 86 Les Paul, studio, but it's, you know, white, kind of aged to cream.
It looks great, by the way. I saw it. Jordan showed it to me. Yeah. It looks really cool. The aging looks really cool.
Yeah. I've always wanted a cream Les Paul. I just think there's just something so cool. Fucking cool about it. You know,
what kind of pickups are in there? Are those like original pickups?
No, those are DiMarzio pickups. They're from the 80s. The guy who had it, I forget who I bought it off of. It was this guy put them in, and they just sound great. It's just a mean sounding guitar. Like I was telling you, I keep it in E flat, you know, for whatever Van Halen or, you know, extreme I want to play. I can just kind of riff on it and just have the best time.
That's cool. And what's another one that you might have?
This was the newest one on my kind of arsenal. I work with been working with a guitar company called Sterling by Music Man.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a guitar called the Valentine, which is James Valentine's, the guitar player of Maroon 5. Mm-hmm. So he has a custom that, and it looks great. It looks like a combination of a Les Paul Jr. and a Tele. So it's super versatile. It looks great. And it plays really well, which is really cool. But it has a really cool feature on it where on one of the knobs, it's like a coil tap, but it's a dB boost and it gives you a little bit of gain.
Oh yeah, I've seen those.
Yeah. So I remember, I used it on a show in Philly. for the whole set because it was like one fly date, and when it's just one date, I just was like, fuck it, I'll just bring one guitar.
Sure.
And that's a guitar I can 100% know I will nail the whole set with, because I can get a kind of tele clean thing, but also, you know, drive it up with that boost thing. So that was really cool.
That's very cool.
You know, and I've learned also, like, just with guitars, like, if, like, that guitar isn't that expensive. I mean, that's like a $450 guitar.
Well, neither is your, obviously, your Mexican Strat.
Right.
I mean,
right.
You know.
Exactly. And it's a thing where it's like, you know, if you pick it up, and I have a thing where it's like, if the guitar makes you, or the instrument makes you play better,
yeah,
then that's, you know, that's what you need to be playing. I mean, I've played, you know, you could play $30,000 top of the line custom guitars, and I'm like, play like shit on it.
Correct.
You know,
yeah, I agree with you.
So it's just something, if you're comfortable with it and it makes you sound good, fucking play the shit out of it, dude. You know,
I agree. I always say guitar, and this is probably not popular to say nowadays because I'm being exclusive, but to me, guitar is like a woman. And if a woman's not your thing, pick whatever gender is, you know.
100%.
You know, no matter how good they look, if you don't have that little chemistry thing going there, man, it's just not going to happen. You know, it's exactly. Got to look good, feel right, and make you feel good about what you're doing.
Exactly.
So as far as guitar, who are your bigger influences as far as influences on your playing?
I grew up on a very heavy dose of Eddie Van Halen guitar solos. The Edge, his melodies, and let's see, John Mayer's, his playing. Nuno Bettencourt was huge for me. I mean,
that's not a name I hear very often. I know him, Nuno Bettencourt, of course, but
yeah,
I don't hear that very much.
Yeah, I mean, the guitar solo on Get the Funk Out, I mean, that's probably my favorite guitar solo of all time. It's just, I mean, his playing is just so clean. It's so, you know, but so I grew up on all that 80s stuff and, you know, very much that. So that's why when we were talking about Strangers, I get the fact that I got to wail on, I was like, perfect. I get to kind of tap into my, my childhood.
Your inner Nuno.
Exactly. That's all I could ever hope for in my life. It's just to tap into my inner Nuno.
Yeah. But you know what? This is just your first thing, man. You'll be doing this a lot, and you'll probably wind up producing records, I would imagine.
Yeah. I think, this day and age, you know, being able to do everything and enjoy everything is a very, key component to have in the longevity of your career.
Well, not only that, because your dad was in that position, that's a very natural place for you to be.
Right.
Like evolution wise of your career. Not that you won't play, but you know what I'm saying? I mean, I think that tends to happen, you know?
Yeah.
So I think it'd be a probably natural thing for you.
Definitely. And I talk about that with, you know, my friends all the time, because I have a lot of friends in the entertainment industry and TV and that are my age, and they're, you know, they're PAing and they're working their way into the Directors Guild and all this stuff. And it's like, I enjoy that as well. And, you know, I enjoy that whole thing, but it's just, I think it's just, loving entertainment and being open to everything would be a great thing, for people to have. And I think that's cool that I'm starting to realize that.
Awesome. What's your, I hope I would identify. I hope I could relate to one of them. But top three albums. What's the first three that come to mind?
Let's see. Number one is Joshua Tree.
Okay. Yes, we're good. At least I'm one for one.
Yeah, we're good with that one. Yeah. I grew up. I mean, I've been to
great album.
9 or 10 U2 shows with my dad. Wow, you know, we're just mega U2 fans and the Edge and Bon, you know, that whole thing. So yeah, Joshua. I actually didn't end up seeing that this tour though, which I was bummed out about. But anyway, so yeah, Joshua Tree. Let's see. John Mayer's Continuum is a huge record for me.
Mm-hmm.
And his songwriting and his guitar playing is unbelievable. Let's see. And I'm going to throw you a little curveball here. There's an artist called Frank Ocean. Frank Ocean has an album out called Blonde.
Yeah, I know who that is actually.
Yeah, and that.
I feel
that
really record, good.
That record. That record helped me through a lot of things, and that's just a really powerful, powerful record for me.
Shout out to Frank Ocean and Blonde.
Shout out to Frank.
There you go, man. You know what? I've heard. I had an interview last week with a guy that's a. I usually, you know, 85% of the people I speak to are guitar players, but I spoke to a drummer that I grew up with, and we played in bands together. I used to play saxophone, and we played in bands together back then. And he was telling me it was two situations in his life, and he's like a couple of years older than me, and so he's been playing professionally like 40, 45 years. And he said that there's been two situations in his life where he actually did a gig and wound up hanging around afterwards talking to somebody. And it came back to him to find out that the individual he was speaking with was all fixed, all set to kill herself that night. And because she heard that gig and spent the time with these guys afterwards, she didn't do it. So, you know, music is just so powerful like that. Like, you reminded me that when you said, you know, you had a bunch of stuff going on and that album helped you get through it.
Yeah.
You know, and music is just so powerful.
That's the most fucking amazing thing about this whole thing, you know, with music and doing this thing, is just, you know, being able to affect somebody in a positive way or help them and, you know, through whatever is just, it's so amazing that you can do that with, you know, your passion and how, you know, your writing and your playing or whatever it is.
Yeah.
It's fucking unbelievable.
It is pretty amazing. It's one of the few things that, like, you don't need to have anything in common with somebody else, and you can like the same band and all of a sudden you have a lot in common.
Yeah, definitely. And even this is a funny story, even like down to this primal level of it. Me and a couple of my buddies were in Venice, and we heard there was this huge drum circle, right? And we
in Venice, Italy?
No, Venice, Venice Beach, California.
Oh, California. Sorry.
I'm just so used to saying that here.
Yeah,
so
I'm like Venice. Sorry about that. Should have dropped on that quicker.
No, you're good. No, yeah. So we're like, oh, there's this huge drum circle. I'm like, okay, let's go check it out. So we went down to the beach, and it was on the sand. There was like 300 people all holding different drums. There was like one guy who was like had a whistle that was signaling what tempo to do, and there was just people dancing. And I had a moment when I was in that drum circle where I was like, nobody knows each other here, but we're all just being drawn to this one beat that we all somehow can just connect on in a weird way. We were there for like an hour and a half. Like, it wasn't like we were just having the best time, and that fucking freaked me out. I'm like, shit, this thing's crazy music.
did legal weed in California have anything to do with that night?
I think legal weed definitely had a little bit of it. definitely had a little bit of influence.
Call me a skeptic, but I don't know. I just figured I'd throw that out there.
it was a good time. We had fun.
Well, good, man. I'm glad you did that. Most important thing your dad taught you?
Probably perseverance when it comes to, I guess it's when it comes to life and relationships and obviously, you know, entertainment, because you just, I mean, you could be on top one week and bottom the next week, you know, with your work or your, you know, whatever it may be. And he definitely has persevered through the years. So that's definitely a thing that I've taken away from him.
So you've watched him go through good times and bad times and
oh, yeah.
the stick-to-itiveness that he had to hang in there.
100%.
That's a great lesson, man. How about your mom?
My mom, probably just not to be judgmental. She's so accepting and loving of different of all people and everybody around her, or strangers, whatever, you know, what have you. She's a wonderful woman, and she's definitely taught me to just be accepting of everybody, because you just don't know what the fuck people go through.
Yeah, it's really hard to tell sometimes what's on the other person's mind, and it's easy to sometimes take stuff personally, but you have to detach and just say, you know, it's not my stuff, whatever, you know.
Exactly.
But yeah, that's great lessons. You have any hobbies outside of music?
Yeah, I like to stay fit and healthy and active. It's a thing where it's more of a mental, well, it's also, you know, it's an aesthetic thing, but I absolutely love, you know, it's a mental thing. I mean, I go to the gym for an hour and a half and I watch what I eat, and it's just, it's an endorphin thing that, you know, it's also a thing that I've learned that I can control it, and I can't control anything else in my life, you know, because I'm,
much.
You know, pretty much like I'm in a signed band with different people, with a million different people working, you know, it's not like I can control really what's going on.
Hmm.
So the fact that I can control, you know, my, you know, what, you know, what I look like, how I feel, it's a thing that it's like a drug that I guess is good.
Yeah,
it's a good drug, right?
Oh, it's great. And you know what? You started it like at a young age, you started primarily for vanity purposes. But as you get older, you'll see how much it's benefiting your health, because you'll look on Facebook. Like I look on Facebook, man, and I'll see some people and I'll call my wife over and be like, babe, please tell me I don't look this bad. And she's like, oh, no, shit. You're okay. Well, because people haven't taken care of themselves.
Right.
It's not like I look great, like naturally.
You do, though.
But you look great. Thank you, honey. No, but you know what I'm saying? I mean, it's like, holy shit, how have you allowed yourself to decay? And I'm thinking, man, you know, we got 30, 35 years of life left, hopefully. And like, what the hell, man? Anyway, exactly. But that's a good thing you're doing. So fitness, that's awesome, man.
Yeah.
Favorite and least favorite part of what you do?
Let's see. I think my favorite thing is being able to connect with so many people. Because, you know, like I said, everyone has their own story. Everyone has their own shit to deal with. So the fact that I can take them away from that for 3 minutes in a song is a pretty cool thing that I've learned. My least favorite part is, I mean, the traveling is insane. You know, I mean, you do like, you know, you do these tours and you do these fly dates and you're just absolutely destroyed. You know, you get used to it and you get conditioned for it. But at the same time, it's definitely a thing.
Yeah. But imagine you're a guy who's in good shape and you're not eating crap. Imagine the guys that are like getting off the airplane and eating McDonald's in the airport.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
What it's doing to them. You know, it's pretty difficult to even think about.
Yeah.
All right, man, what's your one unanswerable question? Like, is there one question you always seem to be asking yourself that you keep coming back to?
Yeah, I think probably why – I mean, I don't know. I mean, I always just want to do more, whether it's – I mean, I want to play bigger shows. I want to write better songs. I want to make better relationships with people. I don't know if that's a thing because I'm young and I just want – you know, I just want everything to be great and more, and, you know, and I think that's a thing even just with, you know, happiness. It's like, being, you know, content in where you are with things is what I've found is what makes me happy. When I'm, you know, I can think of a couple moments where I'm actually like very, okay, I'm content with everything. This is great. Even if it's like a moment or like a trip or a relationship, whatever it was, you know, it's like, I've learned that that's a thing, that if you're content with the things around you, that's what makes me the most happy. So when I'm wanting more and wanting all these things, it's not like I'm not happy, but it's like, I'm always confused. Well, I'm always trying to get more shit.
I didn't hear you say you wanted to get more shit. I heard you say you wanted to perform better in your life at various things. I didn't hear you say, well, I want to get, you know, another car. I just heard you say, I want to be a better player. I want to connect and have better relationships. I want to strive to achieve my goals. I mean, I didn't hear you say that.
Yeah.
I want more shit. There's a big difference.
I'm kind of putting myself down here. But
it's not that you're putting yourself down. It's not what you said. I mean, there's a big difference between the guy who, I mean, I think everything you said, I don't think it'll change as you get older. I think you'll always want to be, I mean, if you're a type A person, you tend to always want to, you know, get better, and you never think you're where you want to be, whether it's in the gym or, you know, in a relationship or in a band or in a work situation. You know, I think. And that's a good thing, you know, it keeps you hungry. It, you know, you can't teach hungry.
For sure. Right. That is it. Yeah.
You're either hungry or you're not, you know, and it's like, so I didn't hear you say that at all, man. Yeah. I thought those are all really admirable things, but you took away my last question, what's your definition of happiness? So I'll have to ask you another one.
Oh, okay. sorry about that.
No, it's totally cool, man. It was awesome. And I don't want to ask you I don't want to end on what's the most embarrassing thing that's ever happened to you in stage or in the studio. So how about this? This is a good question I came up with after I put your questions together.
All right.
What's one thing about you or something you do or something you like that people would either be surprised to hear or find odd?
Something that I do that people would think is a little weird. I'm very clean.
OCD clean?
Not OCD clean, but like I'm like obsessed with smelling great, and I just want to be, you know, I don't want to be the guy with bad hygiene. Like I just want to always have good hygiene. I think that's just
a great answer, man.
It's not even a clean thing.
That's
like,
a
I'm
great
not that
answer,
clean, but it's just like a hygiene. That's what it is. It's hygiene.
You have good personal hygiene. All right. Anybody who we heard it here first, Jordan Greenwald has good personal hygiene, and it means he cares, man. This
and
isn't
I
just
fucking
a yeah. This isn't just a passing thing. He fucking cares, man.
That's awesome.
Anyway, man, you're an awesome, really awesome, nice young guy. I'd love to have you back on the show in a couple of years, man, because I know things are gonna rock for you. But where can people find you now online? Where can they see you? How can they connect with you? How can they send you money?
I'll put on my
make your pitch. Yeah. Now's the time.
Right. Yeah. No, you can find me on my Instagram and Twitter at Jordan Greenwald and my band at Lovely the Band on Twitter and Instagram. But yeah, we're touring. We're doing a month long with the Rex. You can go to lovelytheband.com for tickets. But yeah, next year we're 2018. We're hoping to be on the road for a while.
Awesome, man. And like I said, check out the debut EP. It's called Everything I Could Never Say. If you like pop music, it's really good. You'll enjoy it a lot. It's got a lot of energy, and it's a lot of fun to listen to, and you could tell these guys having a good time when they did it. Man, thank you. I appreciate
it. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
No, man, you got your shit together for 21. I'm like, really impressed. Seriously, man. You're really, like, well-spoken, smart, polite young guy, man. I enjoyed talking to you.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it.
Hey, everybody. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed this interview as much as I did. And again, thanks so much to Jordan Greenwald for being so candid and so cool and comfortable. I really appreciate it. And go to everyonelovesguitar.com and sign up to get notified about future episodes. And be nice. Go play your guitar and have some fun. Till next time, peace and love, and I am out. We hope you enjoyed this show. If you did, subscribe to the Everyone Loves Guitar podcast, and you can do this online at everyonelovesguitar.com or on iTunes. And if you like the show, please leave us a 5-star positive review. The more 5-star reviews we get, the higher our show ranks, and higher rankings mean we get to continue speaking with cool, interesting guests on our show. We'll see you on the next episode, and until then, keep playing your guitar and have fun making music.